Some good news to start the show today. Some not so good news to start the show today. It's the Kevin Sheehan Show. Denton Day sitting in for Kevin. That is not the good or the bad news. I guess that's depending, though.
It's news.
It's news, nonetheless. Kevin is back tomorrow from his week-long extravaganza. I don't know where he went. Do you know where he went?
No, he left for vacation when I got back, so we've kind of been playing a little...
ships in the night.
Yeah, we played a tag. Each other.
So Kevin will be back tomorrow. Good news and bad news? Do you have a preference, Max, on which one I give first? Are you a bad news first, then the good news?
Yeah, let's go bad first. Let's get that out of the way.
All right, the bad news. Brandon Coleman is not practicing today.
That is some bad news.
Limped off the field this weekend. Saturday practice. It was family day for the Commanders. He is not practicing today, so that's bad news.
Did you happen to see any of what happened? Because I know you're
out not.
There.
I did not. Yeah, okay. I did not see what happened.
Because I checked in with my source on all things O-line, and he has yet to respond.
Yeah, I didn't see anything with Brandon Coleman. Admittedly, when I was watching offensive line on Saturday, I was more focused on Connerly, which is something we will get to throughout the course of the show. So that's the bad news. No Brandon Coleman practicing today. This is the team's last practice in Ashburn before they go up to Foxborough, have a joint practice with New England on Wednesday, got walkthrough on Thursday, game on Friday. So really there's two good news, Max. Good news number one, it's game week for the Commanders. We are going to see real football, not meaningful football, but real football. Probably won't see a lot of Jayden Daniels. But we will see real football, and we'll see him in the joint practice, which is exciting. But here's the actual good news that I wanted to start with. Deebo Samuel is practicing, and not just practicing, participating and rolling through 11-on-11s as if nothing had taken place on Saturday that would have stopped him.
Nothing did
from
take
practicing.
Place.
Nothing took place.
It's not supposed to be reported.
According to Deebo, well, that's not how that works, unfortunately. Deebo gave somebody a death stare. I'll play that audio for you in a second. But Deebo injured his finger. I don't know. We never got an official diagnosis. A jammed finger versus a dislocated finger. Obviously, one of those is significantly worse. A dislocated finger takes a little bit longer to recover because you got to pop it back in place. You got to make sure your body's cool with it being popped back in place. It's this whole big situation, right? Whereas a jammed finger sucks. Throw some ice on that bad boy, and you can theoretically use it day or two later. No big issue, right? I was standing in front of the play that Deebo injured his finger on. It was the, you know what really sucked about that, Max? It was the third to last play of practice.
Oh.
It was the third to last play of practice. Goal line scenario, the ones are marching down the field. They were not taking on the ones on defense, which is something that we need to talk about, and we will today because it's a little bit of a problem. But they were taking on the seconds and the thirds on defense. Jayden looks for Deebo over the middle. A nice pass breakup by the DB. And then you could just tell immediately something was wrong with the hand. He's holding it. He's shaking it. Comes over to the sideline on the near field, which is like right where me and a collection of other media members were standing. Some expletives were shouted, which is never a good thing.
No.
Never a good thing. Some kids questioned the expletives because, again, it was right in front of the fans. Welcome to football, kids. And then the trainers worked on him a little bit, and there were some more expletives. But he is good to go. He's been catching some passes from Jayden and some 11-on-11s today. So he's good. He is situated. That's good news. You want Deebo healthy, especially if Terry's not out there, because let me tell you, the pickings are slim when it comes to wide receivers, with no Terry and Noah Brown is not practicing today either. Noah Brown hasn't practiced a ton throughout training camp, which is a little unfortunate. Hopefully we get some meaningful Noah Brown reps after the Patriots game this upcoming Friday. I can't imagine that the first practice he will get thrown into is a joint practice, and I can't imagine just with the way that they ramp guys up, that they're going to say, hey, you haven't practiced at all, go play in a preseason game. So hopefully we see Noah Brown next week. That's not intentionally where I was going to start today. It just so happened that because they are practicing today and we got that information prior to the show that I wanted to go there. I do want to start, though, Max, with something that took place on Friday that we had mentioned on the show. It's very, very important, but it wasn't confirmed on the show. It was a Friday news dump because it happened like at 4:30.
It took a long time.
It took a long time.
The entire show, and then we were like 2.5 hours into a 3-hour show with Doc, and then we got the news.
And then you got the news. I was hoping we were going to get it at like noon on Friday.
It would have been nice.
We got it at 4, and that is that the RFK site is full go for the Commanders. There was a bunch of like, really it was a bunch of political nonsense. I don't dabble too much into the ins and outs of the politics. I'm not ingrained in that enough to willingly speak on that. But I'm very much ingrained on the stadium coming back to where it is, or to where it was, rather, where it, I guess was kind of supposed to be, and then it wasn't for a little bit, and now it is going back. Washington coming back to RFK is a massive deal. I don't need to tell all of you this. Most of you are aware because most of you grew up going to games at RFK. But it is very big for people in the age bracket of myself, in the age bracket of Max, and some of the other hosts that you will hear on this network on 106.7. It is so nice that we can celebrate and get this stadium back to a place that feels like it's ours.
A home that isn't leaking sewage.
That's not leaking sewage.
It's not collapsing in on itself.
That's not collapsing on Jalen Hurts, although if you wanted to add something for that, I'd be down.
Yeah,
if you want to collapse on him, that's fine. But it's just nice that you'll be able to have like a central location, but also a location that's easy to get to. For everybody?
Accessible by Metro, and you mean I don't have to walk a mile?
I can't tell you. So I had season tickets, my family did, in 2007. I had been to one game prior to that, but my family was like, you know what? We see that you're loving football. We're going to splurge. Let's get some season tickets, right? We have it. We've been on the wait list because that was at the time where there was a wait list. And we got some season tickets. And I remember the horrifying feeling getting off of a jammed Metro, because the Metro going to games is just packed out the wazoo, which is good.
Sardines in there.
It's good because people are going to games, or they were at that point. It sucked because I don't like being packed into Metros. Don't like it at 30 years old. Didn't like it at, 2007, I was 12. Didn't like it then. Don't like it now.
Fair.
And then getting off of the Metro and then having to walk a mile to go to the stadium to watch the game. We weren't going to drive. I've since driven after working there, doing the 980 street team back in like 2017. Drove there for a couple of games. I drove there once because I took my then wife, to a game last year. Although last year's extravaganza was not as terrible as it had been in years past. But getting there sucks. It's
never
tough
good.
To get to from the Beltway. I don't know that it'll be much better if you are driving. Once it gets back to RFK, because the parking situation is not going to be great, but it'll be so much easier to get to from the Metro, where everyone will be encouraged to do so, and it's just going to be so nice to have all of the teams that we cheer for on these stations, and if you are from here, that you cheer for in your day-to-day life, all in the same city. Not three teams in D.C., and then one all the way out there in Landover, or if Ted Leonsis had his thrill of it, multiple teams in Virginia, one in D.C., and then one in Maryland. Like, having all of them in one central spot, and then having a new state-of-the-art stadium, and this thing is going to be an absolute doozy. The Commanders are pledging an unprecedented $2.7 billion towards the project that'll include the 65,000-seat stadium. That'll also host concerts after football season. It'll probably get, I'm a wrestling fan, Max. It'll probably get a big-time WWE event. I mean, they just hosted a two-night SummerSlam in East Rutherford where the Giants and the Jets play.
So Tyrese got a very warm welcome.
Tyrese Halliburton did get a warm welcome, but imagine having that here in D.C. Imagine having a Final Four, men's or women's, in D.C., I don't know that a Super Bowl will get here. I think they like to get bigger stadiums, but Roger Goodell knows the history of D.C. and its significance to the NFL. So imagine getting a Super Bowl here in D.C. It's so much easier to have a Super Bowl, regardless of what the stadium was going to look like, even if it did end up in Maryland. Like, it could have been this Jerry World. It could have been, you know, SoFi, just like this new state-of-the-art, never-before-seen thing that was beautiful from top to bottom. It could have been all of those things. In Landover, that sucks. in D.C., it's so much easier to justify holding a Super Bowl here. I was at the Super Bowl, as you know, Max, in New Orleans. Having everything centrally located in one city where you can stay at a hotel that is within reasonable walking distance to the stadium, that is also within reasonable walking distance to the convention center where Media Row was held for the Super Bowl, that is also reasonable walking distance to Bourbon Street, the trifecta of all of the things that you wanted, that is now something that will be readily available in D.C. You can stay around the stadium. You can get there easily. So all of the events that are going to come, if you love Taylor Swift, you probably hate Northwest Field because Taylor Swift hates Northwest Field. She ditched it. She said when she's doing her world tour, she's like, I'm not going to Landover. I'm not going to do that. So if you were a Swiftie, you had to take your talents and your money elsewhere.
Philadelphia.
It's going to be so nice to bring all of that, one, that money back into D.C., mm-hmm. but then just have it be an actual like place where you want to be. On top of that, this project is also going to feature 60,000 or 6,000, not 60. Jeez Louise, I can't read today, Max.
Be a lot.
6,000 housing units with 1,800 affordable housing units. It'll have retail space and community benefits agreements with $50 million or more. The agreement also includes close to $1 billion in public funds and around $1 billion in tax breaks for the Commanders. So it's a huge Commanders investment into the city. D.C. will be paying, you know, some of that as well. But compared to a lot of the other stadiums across the NFL, it's going to be a lot more of the Josh Harris group's money than it will be D.C.'s money. All things very, very positive. And I can't wait to see once this is actually up and running, how beautiful it's going to look, what that area is going to look like. Those of you that have been around long enough to know when the Nationals were playing at RFK and then they built this stadium in Southeast that we are like two football fields away from, the way that this area was then built up was tremendous because it was now a destination and a place to be. So I'm excited to see how that area around the current RFK site is going to change and allow for more people to live in that area, allow for there to be affordable housing in that area, and just then generally be a place to hang out. Because even if there's not a Nats game, like this Navy Yard area is a nice place to hang out. There's like some, it's not like a pool, but there's like some water activities for kids if you live in the city that are not too far away from us. You can get right up on the water if you're someone like me who likes to run, and I like running up against water, even if the Potomac is a little grody. A lot of grody.
Doesn't change the breeze, though.
Does not change the breeze, though. And it's been a hot summer. We know. Air conditioning last week broken. Hot as hell in here. Summer's
still
hot.
Still broken.
Still broken, by the way. But it's nice to, like, Navy Yard is now, like, an actual place where you can, like, hang out and have a good time. So I'm excited to see what that area is going to look like at the RFK campus once this stadium is built. And then, again, you're getting the team back to D.C. And it will feel like it is home again. You guys know this. We all know this. This is a football town first. Even though there's been a large portion of the fan base that, because of the Snyder stuff towards the end, has grown largely apathetic, because of the name change, has grown largely apathetic, having this stadium in D.C., state-of-the-art stadium, now building a winner, and then who knows what happens by 2030, 2031, whenever this thing is fully functioning, what the name of the team is then, I think it's going to be very, very fun, a very fun period to be around DC sports when that all comes back. And then not to mention, Max, we got the draft in 2 years. So it is like this long ramp up to getting the Commanders back into D.C. You get the draft on the National Mall in 27, and then a couple years later, hopefully with some banners to hang, you get RFK Stadium site in a brand new stadium for all of us to enjoy. All double thumbs up from me. I do want to play something, though. So Josh Harris put out an official statement late on Friday after the deal was official. At training camp on Saturday, Dan Quinn talks before practice, and he started his media availability with like a pre-written statement thanking Josh Harris, acknowledging Josh Harris and all of the owners in that group for working hard and doing it the right way of getting RFK back to DC. That was a written statement. At the end of his media availability, we got a little bit more of like Dan Quinn's personality on this. So a question was asked to end the media availability on Saturday about his personal thoughts as a historian of the NFL with the stadium coming back to RFK. And I want you to listen not only to what he's saying, but just how he sounds during this clip.
Remember when the team played in D.C.? What's it like for you to presumptively be the head coach of this team if and when it returns back to its home?
Yeah, I know these guys have been working incredibly hard, man. Like, this is a lot of big steps, you know, that they're putting together. So as much as I think about down the road, I also think about the work that's going in, like, right now. And the type of, you know, attitude it takes to stand up and fight for what you want. So I haven't thought much about down the road, but I think at this point, gratitude for Josh and his team to, like, make this happen. I always have a real appreciation for people that put in the work. And obviously this takes a lot of work to do that. I wish I had coached at RFK. I didn't. But I saw it a lot. And as a, you know, member of this, you know, organization, the DMV, and so for all former Redskins, you know, Redskins, Commanders, everybody, like, there's that energy about it. So I'll leave it till then. But in this moment, I appreciate the work it takes to get to that next step.
And one thing that I do want to mention while he's talking about this, you can't hear or you can't see it, obviously, because we're an audio first medium. But the look on his face and the brightness behind his eyes is one of, like, really genuine excitement and happiness that they're coming back to RFK.
Smiling ear to ear. That was the first time I tweeted this on Saturday. If you're not following me at the Den Day on Twitter, I tweeted this on Saturday. That was the first time I think I have ever heard Dan Quinn legitimately giddy about something non-Jaden Daniels related. You know, it's very easy to be giddy about, like, your quarterbacks, especially last year. Like, it was very, very easy. But there was, like, a genuine excitement, as you mentioned. He was smiling ear to ear. There was, like, a difference in him answering that from a guy that knows the NFL, that's been around the NFL, that understands the importance of this particular franchise playing in this particular city, versus at the beginning was just a written statement. The written statement was nice. I don't have any, you know, it's not like I didn't want to play the written statement. It was just very basic. It was coach speak. It was PR speak. Well, that second answer that we just played, that was not PR speak. That was like, this is so fun that that stadium is going to come back. I don't know if he's going to be the coach by then. I mean, look, man, that's like 5-6 years down the road. Hopefully, if he's still the coach by then, it means things have gone really, really well. And I would like things to go really, really well. But very, very fun stuff and a very, very good thing to be happening. So that's the good stuff. We have a little bit of bad stuff. In order to get to the bad stuff, Max, could you please hit me with a what do you got? I think I need to owe Ken Rosenthal a bit of an apology. Earlier this baseball season, when he took to a column and just took the Nats behind the woodshed and lambasted them for how bad they are, how this rebuild is taking forever and they are going nowhere, I took to the microphone 2 days later. I was sitting right on this very show and I said, I think this is in a little bit of poor taste. The Nationals are moving in the right direction. At that particular point in time, record-wise, they were halfway decent. It was early in the season, but still, they were halfway decent.
They were close to 500.
I was very upset with that article. I was like, man, how could you do this? And boy, hindsight is 20/20, because things have certainly changed. Mike Rizzo is not a part of this team anymore. Davey Martinez is not a part of this team anymore. And winning is not really a part of this team anymore. Run scoring was certainly not a part of this team. It took place at their arena, but it was not a part of this team. The Nats were on the wrong side of history this weekend. The Milwaukee Brewers absolutely torched them, just decimated them over a three-game stretch, breaking Major League Baseball history with 56 hits in three games. How is that even a possible number? 56 hits in three games. I thought they were going to hang 20 on the Nationals on Sunday. They didn't even have their best pitcher, the Miz. Jacob Mizorowski was supposed to pitch for the Brewers. He did not pitch. I thought it was going to be a closely contested game. You know, the Nats would get their runs. I knew the Brewers were going to get their runs. They were too hot not to. And it was just all Brewers and, like, no Nationals. And it just didn't stop. Every time you're like, all right, it's 10-2. Maybe we're going to call it off. Bats are going to stop swinging. Oh, nope, there goes another Brewer home run. And it was a fire hose of offense. And the Nationals could do nothing to stop it. 56 runs in three games. As I pull up my calculator, Max, and do a little bit of math, That's nearly 19 hits a game.
Why'd you have to add it up?
In baseball. Like, we're not talking like this isn't college baseball where some things get out of control. This isn't high school baseball where you're getting run ruled when things get out of control. This is Major League Baseball, and they were averaging nearly 19 runs a game. Unbelievably brutal. Brad Lord did his best, I guess. I hope he didn't do his best, to be completely honest. If that was the best, this team has some long-term problems. But he tried. Like, he was out there, and I'm sure he got frustrated, but he wasn't throwing a Caleb Williams tamper tantrum on there, right? A temper tantrum, rather.
Great clips coming out of this weekend, but
great clips for the Bears. Man, their fan base deserves everything they're getting right now. But that was a tough watch for the Nationals, and it does feel like, to an extent, the team is not back at square one, so to speak, with the rebuild. They still have James Wood. They have Mackenzie Gore, at least for a little bit longer.
For now.
And they do have some good prospects that you would hope, with the right developing coaching staff, that they are going to become something. But, man, it sucks right now. They're like Colorado Rockies bad, it feels like. 56 hits in three games. I'm going to just keep reiterating that number because it is an absurd one at that. Nearly 20 hits per game over a three-game stretch. Ugly, ugly, ugly. Yuck, yuck, yuck. If you watched the game at all yesterday, you could tell the fans were not pleased because the fans were not there. It was as empty as I think I have seen it throughout the course of the season. As many of you know, I do a Sunday show for the BetMGM Network, and that's right here. And it's a floor beneath where I'm sitting right now. Generally speaking, when I drive in, the parking lot that we use here is shared for the Nationals game. Generally, when I get in around like 11 or so, 2 hours ahead of game time, not terribly filled. Yeah, not terribly. But you can start to see people coming in. Dog, that parking lot was empty yesterday. When I finished my show, it was in the seventh inning, that parking lot was still empty. So either a lot of people came in and a lot of people left, or nobody came in. And judging by what I was looking at, because I was watching the game, nobody came in. Ugly, ugly, ugly. We'll shift gears back to football. Terry McLaurin was seen hugging Josh Harris on Saturday. Does that mean things are trending in the right direction? We tackle that next. It's the Kevin Sheehan Show. Denton Day sitting in for Kevin on the Team 980. It's the Kevin Sheehan Show. Denton Day sitting in for Kevin here on the Team 980. At the Denton Day on Twitter. Nick Ashew at 11. Ben Standing will join at 12 after Commanders practice is over. We will hear from the coordinators as well, so we might play some of Cliff Kingsbury for you. Ben had a really great article on his Substack about Cliff Kingsbury, so we'll get to that as well. But Max, there was a video that went, we'll say locally viral.
Very locally viral, yes.
Hyper locally viral. It was training camp on Saturday, family day out there. Practice was over. Terry McLaurin walked out. Now, I said this on Friday. I was like, it's going to be a little weird if Terry walks out. Just to see, like, hey, what is the energy going to be like? I didn't anticipate the fans were going to boo him. You're not going to boo him if you're at training camp. The only people that are booing Terry McLaurin are on Twitter. You're on Twitter. You are in the comments of our YouTube section. Like, that's it. Those are the only people that are booing Terry McLaurin. Anyone that is at practice is going to be very happy to see him. But I was curious, if he did come out, how would the energy be? And what would it be like when he walked out? And the reason I said that, Max, because the setup that they have for days when fans are there, you have the two main fields, one of which is close to where the fans are sitting. And that's where, if you have seen any of the stuff on social media that the team has posted with 11-on-11 drills, passing drills, whatever, that's on the near field. That's where all the fans can see. They want that close to the fans. So you get like the element of playing an actual football game by fans, right? And you actually get people to see it. If you went on the far field, you can't see. And what is the point of having fans there if you can't see it? But the way it's set up is there's a pathway that the players will walk out on with their pads. And on the right side is where you have all of these fields and where you have a majority of the fans. On the left side of this path, the path walks right through. On the left side of this path is where what I believe is like VIP or like the super important people. You can't get over there unless you have, I believe, some sort of pass, some sort of tag, lanyard, whatever. So when players walk out, they walk right through there. When Adam Peters walks out to practice, Dan Quinn, they walk right through that path. There were some people that were yelling at Adam Peters when he was walking in and walking out. They were saying, hey, AP, you got to pay Terry McLaurin. Sam Cosmi walked down that path after practice. Sam Cosmi on the pup list, Terry McLaurin on the pup list. Sam walks right down that path. After Sam Cosmi walked out there, I was like, all right, let's just pay attention. Is Terry going to walk down this path? If Terry would have walked down that path, it would have erupted like this was pro wrestling. You see your favorite guy coming down the path, huge pop from the audience, everybody goes ballistic.
It's the Vince McMahon gif.
Well, not Vince, Stone Cold.
Sure.
We'll go Stone Cold.
I'm thinking of where he's just walking, strutting the shoulders.
Pretty much.
That walk. Like,
it is almost set up to like where it looks like a ramp in a pro wrestling show. But it's just a path. Sam Cosmi walks down there. So once Sam Cosmi walks down there, I'm like, all right, where's Terry going to come from? Because at that point, I kind of figured he's probably going to be out here in some capacity or another. Where's he going to walk out from? He did not walk down that path. What he did was take the long way. And the long way is, remember, there's all of the fans on the right, the important people on the left. He walked behind the important people on the left to then come back on what is a third field, where like that big green ugly turf one used to be. He walked around that side. And once people saw him, everybody saw him, because you start to hear people yell, Terry, everybody looks in that direction and they see him.
You see one guy point and everybody just kind of follows.
Exactly. So he comes that way, and then that's where you see that video. That's why he almost walks up behind where Jayden Daniels' mom was and where Josh Harris was. And you see him hug Jayden Daniels' mom, and then he daps up Josh Harris. All of us, as the media, were also right there. So that was, to an extent, a somewhat calculated move.
Speaking of calculated moves, what was on the back of Terry's shirt?
So the back of Terry's shirt said team.
Interesting.
He was wearing Commanders branded stuff. So like, I'm sure everyone has that variation of the shirt where it says something on the front but the team on the back. I just felt that it was important to point that out on social media because it is starting to feel like there are things that are calculated from Terry and his noticing.
Camp.
Yeah, we are noticing. That's a small detail, right? So it said team on the back. He hugs Jayden Daniels' mom. He daps up Josh Harris. And then he goes over and he talks to Zach Ertz for a little bit. And then he goes and talks to his wife. But he talks to his wife on the far... It's the nearest corner, but it's the far corner. So he's not near a lot of the fans. Mm-hmm. But he's just over there. He's talking to his wife. They probably talk for like five or ten minutes. And then he goes across the field to talk to a few other players. Now, as soon as Terry came out, I was like, well, this is what I'm paying attention to.
Yeah, I'm locked in.
If Terry is out here, I just want to see, again, what is the energy? And from my standpoint, the energy was good. Like, it wasn't positive. He was just, you know, moping around. He wasn't pouting around. He wanted to be out there. He wanted to talk to his wife. He wanted to talk to his teammates. Like, through this entire process, if nothing else, I feel like Terry is still Terry. The business side, I'm sure, is frustrating. We have heard various different numbers now that like 33 is what they're asking for, but Washington's offering 27. 30 still seems like if you get it to 30 with good guarantees, the deal is done. That's my perspective of the way I'm viewing it. I would personally have gone 28, 29, but it feels like if the deal is done at 30, just give them 30, give them high guarantees, get this thing over with, and get it done. But here's what I wanted to see, Max. So when Terry walks from the far corner on the near side
mm-hmm.
to where everybody else is and starts talking with another player or two's wife or fiance, girlfriend, whatever. I don't know everyone's
significant
relationship.
Other, yeah,
significant other. There's some kids around. He walks across the field. There was a point. I don't know that I've seen anybody tweet this, and I did not have my camera ready for this because I'm not a paparazzi, right? Like I'm not the paparazzi. I'm just letting you know what I saw. He walks across the field. Adam Peters is walking in the same general direction. And I'm like, oh my God. Are they about to dap up? Because how crazy would it have been
if these
two guys hit a clean dap, hug it out right in front of everybody?
Place would have erupted.
They did not do that.
Damn.
They didn't do that. They kind of veered off before they got like all that close to each other. And then Terry talked, and then he signed some autographs. I am still of the belief the deal is going to get done. I'm still of the belief that Terry is going to be here. And I have shifted a little bit in my thinking in that I believe it is going to be for $30 million per year.
Probably.
That is kind of where I stand right now. If somebody told Stephen A. Smith that Washington is offering 27 and he wants 33, 30 is the clear meat in the middle point. Now, I don't know how much I believe Stephen A. and his sources. He's not a source guy to me, at least with this organization. But if it's 27 and 33, 30 is the clear meat in the middle point, and that's a reasonable number, and if that's all it's going to take to get it done, you have to get it done. On top of that, the receivers are not very good on this team. Like, I'm telling you, if Terry really wanted to make his point known, he would walk out during practice. He's not going to do this because he is a team guy. I know, it's crazy. People think he's holding out, that he hates everybody. He's not a team guy. He's still very much a team guy. This was evident by that. He was hanging out with his teammates. He still interacts with them inside the building. I actually think, by the way, that he hugged Josh Harris because Josh Harris is not frequently in the building, which no one really cares about this right now, but that to me is a very positive thing because it felt like other ownership might have been a little too around. I don't think like Josh Harris is too around right now, and that's why Terry dapped him up. But I believe that this deal is going to get done. I believe he wants to be here. I believe the team wants him here. It's just a matter of when. The trade request was business. That's all it was. That's all it ever was.
Just the next logical step.
Well, the logical element may be stripped from that because the logical step would have been to do that first. Fair. But it was the final step that the agent had to put any sort of pressure on Adam Peters. But if he was not like this great team guy, he would walk out to practice during practice, stand next to Adam Peters, and point to 11-on-11s. Because let me tell you, outside of Deebo Samuel and Zach Ertz, there was not a lot of guys when they were going one-on-ones on the 11-on-11 drills. First team offense, first team defense. There was not a lot of guys that could create separation.
No pop.
And it is abysmal.
No pop from separation score leader last year, Luke McCaffrey?
Not a lot.
Ah.
He did make a really good catch in 7-on-7s. On Saturday, though.
And not 11-on-11.
Not 11-on-11s, but he made it in front of, again, he made it on the near side, which is where the media stands. And we're kind of spread out, but you know, there were a few of us that were standing right where Luke McCaffrey made that catch, and we kind of looked at each other, and we were like, he needed that one. Like, from a confidence standpoint, he needed that one. Yeesh. So it was nice for Luke to get that. But nah, man, there's not a lot of separation out there outside of guys Deebo and Zach Ertz.
At least now, the secondary looks good.
Secondary does look good. We got to talk about them because the secondary does legitimately look really good. Like really good. But it's hard to differentiate like how true that is.
Like certain Dan Quinn pass defense is good.
We're not gonna put them in that conversation yet.
Just saying.
I see the direction in which you're going. We're not gonna put them
with
a nickname defense yet. If they get there, who knows? But we're not going to put them there yet.
Fair enough.
But they need Terry McLaurin out there. By the way, Zach Ertz, crazy, crazy good at creating separation. For a guy that athletically is not good, he's not at the peak of his career, right? You watch basketball, Max? You a basketball guy?
Every now and again, yeah.
You remember ISO Joe Johnson when Joe Johnson was like 37 years old
Absolutely.
But still averaging 16 points a game? He was just getting after it?
Of course I did.
And you're like, how is this happening? He's not that athletic. He's old. But he's still creating space, getting
still
to a shot.
Bucket.
It's kind of what Zach Ertz is right now. Athletically, he's not at his peak, but the nuances, the awareness, the intelligence, it's the little things that he does to create separation. That guy is legitimately an all-timer for this particular generation.
He's doing the things that the media fawns over Travis Kelce for?
Pretty much, just not dating Sweet. Taylor Swift.
He's married to Julie Ertz, so he's doing just fine.
He's doing just fine. But it was really nice to see Zach Ertz and the way that he and Jaden still connect really, really well. There might be some bad stuff with the tight end room, but we will get to that. We will get to that later. Nick Ashew will join us coming up here in about 20 minutes. If you want to weigh in on Terry, what did you think of the Terry and Josh Harris interaction? Does that leave you with a positive feeling in your mouth? Or was that just a, hey, they just happened to catch a hug on camera? 301-230-0980, 301-230-0980. Your calls on Terry and Josh Harris hugging it out on Saturday when we get back. It's a Kevin Sheehan Show with Denton Day sitting in for Kevin on the Team 980.
All right, here's what's happening on this Monday, August 4th. The Commanders camp injury updates. Deebo Samuel is active in practicing today. He had a jammed finger over the weekend. Brandon Coleman out today battling a leg injury. Dan Quinn says they're not ruling out Sam Cosmi's status for week one. And Terry McLaurin remains on the PUP list with an ankle injury. Over the weekend, Luka Doncic signed a three-year extension with the Los Angeles Lakers worth $165 million as LA looks towards a future without LeBron James. The Nats, they got smoked in a weekend series against the Brewers. Milwaukee set a new team record for the most hits in a series with 56. They also tied for the third most runs scored in a three-game span in franchise history with 38. Nats have the day off today. They will take on the Athletics tomorrow. On 106.7 The Fan, this update is sponsored by the Team 980 YouTube page. Just open the app, type in the Team 980, hit subscribe. Kevin Sheehan is live from 10 to 1. He will be back tomorrow. And Craig Hoffman from 4 to 7. Don't forget to like the streams and turn on notifications to stay up to date on all things DC sports. And that is what's trending.
It's the Kevin Sheehan Show. Denton Day sitting in for Kevin at the Denton Day on Twitter. Nick Ashew joins us in 15 minutes. Get his thoughts on the Commanders' offseason. We're talking Terry McLaurin. Shocking, I know. He had a hug of Josh Harris that went a little viral. I'm expecting to see him today again, Max, after practice. Fans are out there. He seems to come out every time that fans are out there. I have shifted my position slightly in that I think the deal is going to get done. I think that deal is going to be worth $30 million. If they're $6 million apart, theoretically, with the Commanders on 27 and Terry on 33, and we don't know any of those numbers for fact, but it's been reported by various different outlets that those it's at least around those two numbers, getting to 30 should be easy. I know that they're going to potentially want to pay Deebo Samuel next offseason. This is his final year under contract. I know they're going to potentially want to pay Laremy Tunsil next offseason, and they're planning for years to come with the Jane Daniel contract. They might pay Frankie Louvu next offseason as well. I understand all of those things. But you can very easily put together a contract for Terry for $30 million per year, with a lot of that being front-loaded, and then work to get all those other contracts locked in if you decide to. I don't know that it's for certain that like a guy like Deebo is going to be here next year as well. It'd be great if he is, but we don't know that for certain. Laremy, Tunsil, and Louvu, I feel a little bit better about saying, yeah, those two guys are probably going to get paid next year, next offseason. But you can still get a Terry deal done for $30 million that would get him on the practice field and stop the nonsense, stop the drama and all of it. Because make no mistake about it, Terry knew where the cameras were on Saturday. I don't think he played up to him necessarily, but you don't just hug the owner of the football team or the main owner of the football team when you know a bunch of cameras are on you and, oh, by the way, all of us media were standing right there. Like, right over my shoulder is where that shot was taken about Terry hugging Jane Daniels' mother and Josh Harris. So he knew that all of us were seeing that. He knew all of us were watching that. I think he wants to be here. They just need to get on the same page. And as I mentioned, it was very, very nice to see him hugging Josh Harris because it kind of looked like that he hadn't seen Josh Harris in a day or two, 3 days, 4 days, whatever it is. That's a positive thing. I like that. I don't want my owner just sitting around being too involved in some of the day-to-day operations in Ashburn. I want your thoughts. 301-230-0980, 301-230-0980. Your thoughts on Terry hugging Josh Harris. Do you feel like an extension is right around the corner? Feeling a little bit more positive today than we did when we had this conversation on Friday. Cyrus is in Hyattsville. Cyrus, what's going on?
Denton, what's up, man? Real quick, we've had a string of great movies. Have you, Fantastic Four, Superman, Sinners, Thunderbolts, have you gone back to the movies since you had that bad experience with Captain America or no?
So I did. I went and saw Superman 2 weeks ago. It was like the opening day of Fantastic Four, and I was like, man, Superman probably be empty. And it actually was not empty, but I did see Superman, so I still got to see Fantastic Four.
Gotcha. I'm a movie theater lover. It broke my heart when you said you had a bad experience.
I love them too.
Stop
like, it's just
food there.
I need to. I told my wife that same thing when we saw Superman, because I was like, why didn't we just pay $50 for food that really wasn't all that good?
Yeah. anyways, it's such a great sign that to see Terry out there with Josh Harris. It's a reminder of, you know, to all of us that went through the Dan Snyder era, that the owner is not directly involved in contract negotiations, not, you know, sliding in at the last moment to make picks on draft day. It's just such a good sign overall that it's kind of the one thing that's calming me down amidst the, you know, the trade thing and how far this is dragging along. It's such a good sign that I can, you know, just sort of hang my hat on and relax a little bit. Do I want this to be figured out now? Do I want him to get $30 million? Yes, I do. But here's the thing, and I was actually going to ask you this, Denton. Why can't they front load, you know, maybe like sort of nix the contract for this year, say, hey, you're going to get $30 million for 2 years, so 2025, 2026, and then he'll be off the books by the time Jaden's up for his big contract. Is there any reason why they can't do a very short-term extension, 2 years, $60 million fully guaranteed? What's the downside to that? I've been wondering why that can't happen.
Cyrus, appreciate the call as always, my friend. That's a great question. And I was thinking about this really this morning. They have all the power in the world if they want to front load the contract. They can do that as long as they have the finances to do that. And I would guess because there's 26 different owners that they have the necessary finances to do that. What I was thinking about this morning, though, I can't imagine that Terry would sign a two-year deal. Just as I'm racking my brain a little bit on what the NFL landscape is going to look like 2 years from now and what he would look like 2 years from now, at that point, he would be 32 years old, and you're not getting a great contract at 32. It doesn't matter how great you play the next 2 years. What I believe is the reason that Terry is going as hard as he is for this is that he realizes this is the last like great contract he's going to get. Most guys don't get a great third contract. Their second contract is really, really good. He's in a very unique spot to where his second contract was good. This has the potential to be a great contract. If you sign just a two-year deal, you're then setting yourself up at 32 years old to have to do this whole process all over again, and you are not going to be fighting for $30 million at that point. You might just be scraping the bottom of the barrel. So I was thinking this morning, I was like, maybe one of the things that is separating the two sides right now is the amount of years on the contract, and Terry could be in a position where he's arguing more for a longer-term deal, a four-year deal with a lot more financial security than he would be a two-year deal where you get a lot of that money up front, but then you have to do this whole process again. If he gets a four-year deal and he plays really well, he'll then be at the point at the end of that four-year contract where you kind of get like a, I don't want to say a Ryan Kerrigan deal, so to speak, but that's when the team would take care of you a little bit. It's your veteran deal. Like, hey, you meant so much to this team. You still have some sort of gas in the tank, very similar to what kind of where Santana Moss was when he was playing with Robert in 2012. And those like year or two after that, you've meant a lot to this team. We really want to keep you around for some of the things that you bring to the locker room. Maybe you're not as good at 33, 34 years old as you were at 30, so we'll still give you a little bit of money, but we're not going to give you crazy money for a fourth contract. So maybe there's an element of Terry fighting for more years on the deal for more sustained financial stability there. I was thinking about that this morning, and I was like, maybe he doesn't want a two-year deal. Two-year might be great because you can argue like, hey, 2 years, $60 million, you get your 30 AAV. But I don't know that you want to. I don't know if I'm a 30-year-old wide receiver looking for a big contract that I would want a shorter deal. This would be the point where I'd want at least 3 years, maybe 4 years, just for that added security. 301-230-0980, 301-230-0980. Dominic is in Tampa. Dominic, what's going on?
Hey, Dan. Good morning.
Morning.
Yeah, so I'm not really reading much into that, hug with, Josh there. I think, you know, after all is said and done, yeah, he's gonna sign a deal. I'm still nowhere ever even close ever giving him anything more than $30 million. I'm just not. It's just one of those situations because you said it. You know, you gotta think about future. You gotta pay Lou. I mean, Frankie Louvu is the heart and soul of this defense. Let's no, there's no denying that. You lose Frankie Louvu on that defense, okay, who you replace with him? So, you know, just 29.5, you know, 30, call it a day at 3 years, I'd say, and let's move forward. I mean, it's really getting ridiculous and tiring, you know, just listening to it every single day. I mean, I know you need news and you need stuff to break and whatnot to pass time by, but, you know, enough is enough now. Just do what you got to do, get it over with, and let's focus on football.
Dominic, I appreciate it. So here is something that could make the Frankie Louvu situation very similar to Terry. Frankie Louvu is 28 years old. He turns 29 4 days after Terry, which means this time next year, when he will be on the third year of his deal, likely without a bunch of guarantees, looking to get some sort of extension in a very similar spot to what Terry is, he will then be entering his age 30 season. Now, we have seen with defensive ends, there's a lot more longevity with playing that position into your 30s. We've seen that with Von Miller, who's played into 35, now 36 this year with the Commanders, and still been successful at a high level. But Frankie Louvu is going to be going into his age 30 season next year, having these same sorts of conversations with this front office that clearly values age in some sort of capacity. At least that is what we have been led to believe throughout this entire process. Again, there's not a lot that we know. That, I think, is positive because it means this franchise, this organization, isn't giving news to anybody that asks and not just leaking the way that it has in years past. But Frankie Louvu is going to be in a very similar situation to Terry, albeit he doesn't have the years of goodwill that Terry has built up with this franchise. He will have had two at that point and two very good years, hoping that this year is as good as it was last year and he's playing at an all-pro level, the same way that Terry played at an all-pro level last year. But it's going to be really interesting because when you think about if they're saving the money for Laremy Tunsil and Louvu, which I believe that they are, you know, taking into consideration that they might be giving those two guys in particular contracts next year. Tunsil's a little bit older than that, but Trent Williams, Tunsil's 31. He just turned 31, so he'll be entering his age 32 season next year. But we've seen, like, with Trent Williams has been an all-pro in, like, the last 3 years at ages 33, 34, 35. So you can play the offensive line position at an older age at a very, very high level still. So I don't think age will be as big of a factor with Tunsil. But Louvu is going to be in the exact same spot that Terry's in now. So that's just something to monitor and keep in the back of your mind. I believe that's playing a bit of a factor here as to why they're not going up to 30 or they haven't gone up to 30 right now, at least that we know of. If they've been offering Terry 30 and he's denying $30 million per year, then that goes more to Terry's and Terry's agent's camp and saying, guys, what are we doing here? Because that is then making things and the situation very, very tough. You will hear from Joe Witt Jr. You will hear from Cliff Kingsbury coming up here in about 25 minutes. But coming up next, my guy Nick Ashew is going to jump on with us. We'll get his thoughts on the Commanders and their offseason. Don't go anywhere. It's the Kevin Sheehan Show with Dent Day sitting in for Kevin on the Team 980.